And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's December 28th. 362nd day of the year. Only 3 days until this year is in the rearview mirror. A lot of folks think that's a good thing. On this day in 418, a papal conclave begins, results in the election of Pope Boniface I. 457, Majorian became the Western Roman Emperor. He'd been a prominent general in the Roman army. He deposed Emperor Avitus in 457 and succeeded him. He was the last emperor to make a concerted effort to restore the Western Roman Empire with its own force. Possessing little more than Italy, Dalmatia, some territory in northern Gaul, Majorian campaigned rigorously for 3 years against the empire's enemies. His successors, until the fall of the empire in 480, were actually instruments of their barbarian generals or emperors chosen to control by the Eastern Roman court. Eastern Roman Empire became the dominant force. That was Byzantium. 484, Alaric II succeeds his father Euric and becomes king of the Visigoths. Establishes his capital at Sur-Ile-Adour in southern Gaul. In 893, an earthquake destroys the city of Divin in Armenia. 1065, Edward the Confessor's Romanesque monastic church at Westminster Abbey is consecrated. 1308, the reign of Emperor Hanazono of Japan begins. 1659, the Marathas defeat the Adishanhai forces at the Battle of Kanhapur. 1768, King Thaksin's coronation achieved through conquest as a king of Thailand and established Thonburi as a capital. 1795, construction of Yonge Street, formerly recognized as the longest street in the world, begins in York, in Upper Canada. That's present-day Toronto. 1832, John C. Calhoun becomes the first vice president of the U.S. to resign. He was elected senator from South Carolina after he became VP, so he resigned from being VP to be the senator. If that makes any sense. 1835, Osceola leads his Seminole warriors in Florida into the Second Seminole War against the U.S. Army. 1836, South Australia and Adelaide are founded. Also in 1836, Spain recognizes the independence of Mexico with the signing of the Santa Maria Calatrava Treaty. 1846, Iowa was admitted as the 29th U.S. state. 1879, the Taybridge disaster. Central part of the Tayrail Bridge in Dundee, Scotland, collapses as a train goes over it. 75 people are killed in that little fiasco. 1885, the Indian National Congress, a political party in India, is founded in Bombay, presidency in British India. 1895, the Lumiere brothers perform for their first paying audience at the Grand Café in Boulevard des Capucines. Now, for those who are not familiar with the Lumiere brothers, they were manufacturers of photography equipment, best known for their cinematographique motion picture system and the short films they produced between 1895 and 1905. That made them the earliest filmmakers in history that we know of. 1895, Wilhelm Röntgen publishes a paper detailing his discovery of a new type of radiation. That new type of radiation is later known as X-rays. 1902, the Syracuse Athletic Club defeats the New York Philadelphians 5-0 in the first indoor professional football game. It was held at Madison Square Garden. 1908, 7.1 Messina earthquake shakes southern Italy with a maximum Berkeley intensity of 11, which is extreme. It killed between 75,000 and 200,000 people, depending on which reports you read. 1912, the first municipally owned streetcars take to the streets of San Francisco. That was before Rice-A-Roni became the sponsor. 1918, Constance Markievicz, while detained in Holloway Prison, becomes the first woman to be elected a member of Parliament to the British House of Commons. Now, she was also known as Countess Markievicz and Madame Markievicz. She was an Irish politician, a revolutionary, a nationalist, a suffragist, a socialist. Was elected Minister for Labor in the first Dáil, becoming the first female cabinet member, cabinet minister in Europe. She was a founding member of the Fianna Éireann, Cumann na Mbeadh, band in the Irish Citizen Army. Took part in the Easter Uprising of 1916, when the Irish Republicans attempted to end British rule and establish an Irish Republic. She was sentenced to death, which was commuted to life imprisonment because she was female. She and other Sinn Féin MPs formed the first Dáil Éireann. She supported the anti-treaty side of the Irish Civil War. She died in 1927, made a whole lot of British officials quite happy when that happened. 1941, World War II, Operation Anthropoid, the plot to assassinate high-ranking Nazi officer Reinhard Heydrich starts. He was eventually assassinated, and Hitler had a meltdown. 1943, Soviet authorities launch Operation Ulusi, beginning the deportation of the Kamyak Nation to Siberia and Central Asia. 1943, World War II. After 8 days of brutal house-to-house fighting, the Battle of Ortona concludes with the victory of the 1st Canadian Infantry Division over the German 1st Parachute Division and the capture of the Italian town of Ortona. 1944, Maurice Richard become the first player to score 8 points in one game in the National Hockey League ice hockey. 1948, the DC airliner NC-16002 disappears 50 miles south of Miami. 'Twas never seen again. 1956, Xi Jinping, David Marshall, and Tunku Abdul Rahman meet in Beijing, Malaya to try and resolve the Malayan emergency situation. 1958 was the greatest game ever played. The Baltimore Colts defeat the New York Giants in the first ever National Football League sudden death overtime game at New York's Yankee Stadium. 1967, American businesswoman Muriel Siebert becomes the first woman to own a seat on the New York Stock Exchange. 1972, the last scheduled day for induction into the military by the Selective Service System was this date. Due to the fact President Nixon declared this day a national holiday of mourning due to the death of President Harry Truman, about 300 men weren't able to report due to most federal offices being closed. And since the draft wasn't resumed in 1973, they were never drafted. Also in 73, the United States Endangered Species Act is signed into law by President Nixon. 1989, a magnitude 5.6 earthquake hits Newcastle, New South Wales, Australia. 13 people are killed. 2006, war in Somalia. Militaries of Somalia's transitional federal government, Ethiopian troops capture Mogadishu unopposed. 2009, 43 people die in a suicide bombing in Karachi, Pakistan, where the Shia Muslims are observing the Day of Ashura. 2014, Indonesia Airline Flight 8501 crashes into the Karimata Strait en route from Surabaya to Singapore. 162 people are killed. And in 2014, 9 people died and 19 reported missing when the MS Norman Atlantic catches fire in the Strait of Taranto in the Adriatic Sea. That was Italian waters. Okay, and there's been a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Far too many to go into. And most of the names wouldn't mean much. Christian feast days, well, holidays of observances, Christian feast days, a bell in the Coptic Church. Caterina Felpicelli, feast of the Holy Innocents, or Childer Mass. In Spain and Latin American countries, the festival is celebrated with pranks, similar to April Fool's Day. This is in the Catholic Church, Church of England, and the Lutheran Church. Els Infernats in Ibi, Spain. Simon the Athenite. King Taxis Memorial Day in Thailand. Proclamation Day in South Australia. Celebration started on the day following Christmas in South Australia. South Sudan, it's Republic Day. And in Western Christianity, it's the fourth of the 12 days of Christmas. Okay, let's see what else we might have. '801, Louis de Vérome occupies Barcelona. 1612 was the first observation of Neptune by Galileo. He called it a fixed star, didn't realize it was a planet. 1732, Benjamin Franklin, writing under the pseudonym of Richard Saunders, begins publication of Poor Richard's Almanac. 1781, Comte de Rochambeau and Nicholas Luckner are the last generals to be made marshals of France by Louis XVI before the Revolution. And when he needed them, where were they? In hiding. 1816, the American Colonization Society is organized. 1828, 6-point earthquake strikes Chigo in Japan. 30,000 people are killed. 1836, proclamation of South Australia as a British province. Formal proclamation was read out in what's now the Adelaide suburb of Glenigg North by Captain, later Rear Admiral Governor Sir John Hindmers. On that same day, the colony of Adelaide, South Australia, is formally proclaimed. 1849, M. Jolly Bellin discovers dry cleaning. Accidentally upset lamp containing turpentine and oil onto his clothing, and what's the cleaning effect? 1850, Rangoon, Burma is destroyed by fire. 1860, Harriet Tubman arrives in Auburn, New York on her last mission to free slaves. She had evaded capture for 8 long years on the Underground Railroad. 1864, the Battle of Egypt Station in Mississippi. 1867, U.S. claims Midway Island, the first territory annexed outside the continental limits. 1869, William Finley Semple of Mount Vernon, Ohio, patents chewing gum. And the bottoms of desks all over the country went to pot. 1877, John Stevens applies for a patent for his flour rolling mill. 1887, John Layton Jarvis becomes the first British racehorse trainer to be knighted for services to racing. 1893, French Lieutenant Boitoy annexes Timbuktu. 1902, the Trans-Pacific Cable links Hawaii to the U.S. 1904, the first daily wireless weather forecast was published in London. In 1912, the National Council of Young Israel convenes. 1914, the Turks are repulsed by the Russians after fighting in Armenia for weeks. 1915, the British cabinet, on this date, I might add, recognized the true nature of the war by deciding to institute compulsory military service. Single men were to be conscripted before married ones. 1921, the beginning of the Rand Rebellion in South Africa. The rebellion started as a strike by white mine workers and became an open armed rebellion against the state. 1926, Imperial Airways begins England to India mail and passenger service. 1928, the mother of the blues, Ma Rainey, makes her last record, Big Feeling Blues. 1931, Lin Xin succeeds Chiang Kai-shek as president of Nanjing, China. 1934, the film Bright Eyes premiered, starred Shirley Temple, and featured the song On the Good Ship Lollipop. She had quite an interesting career. 1935, Pravda publishes a letter by Pavel Postashev, revived the New Year tree tradition in the Soviet Union. 1937, fascist Octavian Goga becomes Prime Minister of Romania. 1941, a state of siege goes into effect in Bohemia and Moravia. 1942, Oberkommando Wehrmacht orders strategist flight out of Caucasus. 1942, Robert Sullivan becomes the first pilot to fly the Atlantic 100 times. 1945, Congress officially recognizes the Pledge of Allegiance. 1948, Israeli Defense Force crosses the Egyptian border on this date. 1949, 20th Century Fox announces it's going to go into TV production. 1950, Chinese troops cross the 38th parallel into South Korea. 1956, Miss Francis did the last Ding Dong School on NBC TV. I remember that show. 1958, The Chipmunks. That's Alvin, Simon, Theodore with David Seville. It's number one. 1962, UN troops occupy Elizabethstad, Katanga. On this day in 1964, principal filming on Dr. Zhivago began. In 1966, 13 people die in a train crash in Everett, Massachusetts. In 1968, on this date, Israel began its assault on the Beirut airport. And in an interesting day in sports, in 1969, Dallas Cowboy kicker Mike Clark, attempting an onside kick against Cleveland, actually missed the ball entirely. In 1972, Kim Il-sung becomes president of North Korea. On this day in 1972, a skeleton believed to be that of Martin Bormann, Hitler's deputies, found in Berlin. There's still arguments about whether or not that is his skeleton. It's believed he wound up escaping to South America. In 1973, the comet Kohoutek hit perihelion. 1974, the 6.3 earthquake strikes Pakistan. Over 5,000 people killed. And if you've ever heard the expression, a Hail Mary effort, that came from 1975 on this date. With 32 seconds left in the NFC divisional playoff, Cowboys quarterback Roger Staubach threw a legendary 50-yard winning touchdown pass to Drew Pearson to defeat the Minnesota Vikings. And the Hail Mary play is born. Well, I think in 1976, Winnie Mandela is banished in South Africa. Let's see if there's anything else worth mentioning. In 1984, the TV soap opera Edge of Night ends its 28-year run. In 1985, there are people who are determined they're going to talk to me no matter what. And let's see. In 1991, Irene, the icon of Greek Orthodox Church, is returned after being stolen. Well, I think we've pretty much come to the end of this history segment. Oh, in 2012, Vladimir Putin signs a law banning U.S. adoption of Russian children. Well, you know, we've been talking about a lot of unusual things. We have been talking about shadow people. And I've had a number of people respond to that they've seen them. Now, the interesting thing, let me see if I can get my system up. Ah. It's not just old houses and old structures, it's new houses too. Now, we were talking yesterday about a family that came to a paranormal expo, and there's more and more of those around the country. And they reported their daughter was frequented by a hat-wearing shadow who would simply stand near one of the girls' beds at night and stare at them. It seemed to like the oldest. And both daughters had seen it. A few years later, the family moved out of that house, and the visits from the hat man ended. So that shows in this particular instance, it was not attached to the to the people, it was attached to the structure. Without talking to the new owners, you can only speculate that the hat man probably remained at the house to observe the next family. But there's been a theory, maybe it wasn't attached to the structure, maybe it was assigned to the structure. We don't know what the hierarchy is in shadow people. Now, in 1952, Albert K. Bender established the International Flying Saucer Bureau, during what was known as the Great UFO Flap of that year. And he published a quarterly journal for this organization called Space Review that reported UFO and extraterrestrial encounters seen across the country. A year after he started his organization, he was visited by what became known as the Men in Black. And they threatened his organization, insisting he no longer talk about these types of phenomena. And he talked to a writer by the name of Gray Barker, who wrote a book in 1956 called They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers. And at that point, Bender got out of UFO research. Now, in 1962, Bender published a book called Flying Saucers and the Three Men, in which he talked about his encounter with the Men in Black. He said late one night, working in his office, he started to feel ill. So he decided to lay down. When he did, he saw three shadowy figures with shining eyes wearing fedoras walk through the wall. Now, he said through telepathy, they communicated they wanted him to stop his UFO research. He said he detected the strong aroma of sulfur. They frightened him so much that he was unable to eat for 3 days. Now, his conclusion was that these three hat-wearing figures are extraterrestrials trying to silence his work in the study of UFOs. Beings from another world, these men in black may have been, but there are a lot of similarities between Bender's account and those that report hat-wearing shadow phenomena. In both cases, they materialized seemingly out of nowhere, and they were wearing fedora-style hats when they met Bender. And they had glowing eyes, similar to a number of other shadow people reports. Now, when they come in groups, shadow entities quite often come in threes, and they routinely speak telepathically. Now, there are those that believe Bender actually encountered shadow people and not aliens. Or maybe aliens are shadow people, or shadow people are aliens. Now, while these encounters would certainly be extraterrestrial in nature, they definitely have the aura of the supernatural attached and would certainly seem to be linked to each other in some as yet unexplained fashion. Now, there have been stories told by those who have relations with the National Security Agency that other men in black encounters, which are controlling shadowy part of our government flex against muscle involve real beings with some sort of secret agenda. But in spite of that, it would appear that many of these reports by people deal with them having experienced what others have experienced for centuries, something not of this plane of existence. Well, the Hat Men are simply humanoid spirits wearing some sort of clothing to make themselves look like humans or other type of shadow entity entirely is still not known. Any viewpoint stating definitively one way or the other is just somebody's opinion, although that person may be correct to one degree or another. The Hat Man, along with his or maybe her intentions, because you don't know if it's a male or a female, remains one of the most mysterious of all the shadow entities. Now, most commonly, shadow people don't appear to have eyes. Usually they're completely devoid of features. No eyes, no nose, no mouth, no nothing. Everything is just black. But on occasion, some shadow people do present eyes that are quite striking to witness, since the color is heavily contrasted against the blackness of the rest of the face. So why do some shadow people have eyes, and what do the color of the eyes mean, if anything? Now, the most notorious of the colored eyes shadow people are the ones with red eyes. And these are generally considered more nefarious in nature, devious entities who strike fear into the victims they encounter, much like the Hat Man. In fact, some folks will go so far as to call the red-eyed shadow people evil. Quite often, they're described as demons. One of the biggest cases that's been reported so far involved a dark, malevolent entity with red eyes that lived in the closet of a young adult woman in Edmond, Oklahoma. In fact, the TV show The Haunted did a story on it. It was originally aired on the Animal Planet. It's been now in broadcast syndication on multiple networks, including Netflix. That particular story is titled Monster in the Closet. It focuses on the haunting of Talasian, a young woman who has been terrorized by a figure she routinely saw standing in her closet doorway. It had red eyes and a nasty disposition included in impressing self-destructive thoughts on her. Now, you have to excuse me, when people try to call me about my car's warranty or to sell me Medicare insurance, they are quite persistent. Now, according to the female witness, as the days went on, after she saw the red-eyed thing, she was in a very, very, very depressed state. All she wanted to do was die. She wanted to hurt herself. She wanted to kill herself. She felt she wasn't worth the space she took up on the planet. Now, this particular entity, according to her, had been seen years before by her brother, Travis, who said, "I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm frozen solid. I can see my breath." And the atmosphere wasn't cold enough to see breath, but suddenly he hears a voice and it says, "Not my fault." Well, he cut his eyes to look at his closet, couldn't believe what he was seeing. It was a dark, dark entity with red eyes. He was petrified. He started yelling, "Get out, you're not welcome here." At that moment, the room got calm. Shortly after that, he moved out. It was something about the atmosphere of the house. It just depressed him after that. Now, without knowing what her brother had experienced, including a wildly chaotic paranormal event he described as a wrestling match between two people in his room he couldn't see, Talasian moved into his old bedroom, and then she began to experience the activity. When she had gone to bed, she said, Jasmine the cat was asleep in the bed with her, and she remembered hearing something like feet shuffling on the carpet, and the cat jumped up, began to growl. And he heard something, a voice whisper her nickname, Tal. And then she saw a really, really dark shadow in the corner above her closet. Right in the middle of it were two red eyes that just sat there and stared at her. Well, then this entity attacked her psyche, instilling thoughts in her mind of self-infliction that she'd never had before. She couldn't figure out why she was feeling the way she was, because she never felt that way before. And although she didn't leave home like her brother had done, she unknowingly followed his lead by not saying a word. She said the only time she felt happy was when she was away from the house. Didn't say anything to anybody about what was going on, but it was weighing heavily on her mind. And her behavior began to change, and her mother reported hearing her cry out from her room sometimes. She said there were times when Talasian wouldn't be herself. She'd be very hostile. Didn't sound like herself. Didn't look like herself. After an incident one night in which the mother was held down in her bed by something unseen, her husband Danny, shocked to wake to her thrashing about, called a family meeting. And this meeting was a love relation to the family. All were shocked to discover they'd all been experiencing paranormal activity at the house for over the last 20 years. And a number of stories began to be bandied about. The most pressing matter at hand, of course, was Talasian's torment from the dark entity with the red eyes. A paranormal investigation team was called in to help determine what was going on at the house and put a stop to it if they could. Research uncovered a number of tragedies had taken place at the house. Two suicides, one intentional, one accidental, and an attempted suicide during a violent domestic dispute that had gone wrong. Part of the investigation was in determining whether the entity tormenting the young lady was one of those who had died on the property, in that bedroom no less, or something else. Something that may have been at the heart not just of her problem, but those of experienced by people who previously lived there. Were they driven to do what they did by an outside force? Well, through questioning, experimentation, and research, they determined the dark entity terrorizing Talasian was not a previous resident of the house. It was something else. Something even older than the house. Now, the investigators never reported seeing the entity with red eyes during their investigations, but there was a shadow entity of a different ilk that was seen in that room. It's possible this other shadow was an incomplete manifestation of the entity with red eyes, but in a situation like this, it's almost impossible to know. A demonologist was brought in to determine specifically what the entity was and try to drive it out of the house. Well, the demonologist was talking to the mother on the phone when the daughter walked into the room and demanded to know who was on the phone. When she was told who it was, in a strange voice, she called demonologist the chastiser and insisted that the mother hang up the phone. Also insisted he not be allowed to come to the house. And then she went into the kitchen, crashed to the floor, choking. Once the mother hung up the phone to check on her daughter, she calmed down completely and had no memory of what had happened. Demonologists later called the entity with the red eyes a wraith. Now, wraith, now that's an archaic term, but it indicates a form of shadow ghost, a shadow person, if you will. Because malevolent tend to call it a wraith. They're combative and they tend to have their own agenda. And they're insidious. They have a sinister intelligence and go after somebody and target a person. If something that knows the family, knows its victim, it acts almost like it studied the victim. Now, there are many things that happened the night that a cleansing was performed on the house. Doors blew open on their own, and electronic voice from Nana was captured on recorders that said, "Die." Maybe it's the color red, an emotionally intense color associated with danger and power and passion and evil that causes one's blood to boil when viewing an entity with these type of eyes. It's also the color of strength and perseverance. Now, Talesian, of course, had a negative experience with a dark red-eyed entity. Others have reported shadow people's red eyes are seemingly more ambivalent in nature. So you have to try to guess what the true intentions of these entities are, but sometimes a red-eyed shadow person acts just like their humanoid figure counterparts and demonstrate a kind of a curiosity. There was a young lady named Lori who talked about her own personal experience with a red-eyed entity. It wasn't malevolent. Now, while it was creepy, the nature of the incident gives pause to the question just exactly what these things are trying to do. Now, you can see a lot of stories about these type of entities on YouTube. And she had watched one and felt a need to contact the folks who posted it. Now, she said she hadn't come across many people online or offline, for that matter, that have seen a shadow figure. But she was one. Happened when she was 37. It's about 10 in the evening. Her husband at the time and their children are already tucked up in the bed. There's a wall between the kitchen and the living room. They had a large bay window on the living room side. Now, you might think that she was probably lying down on the couch asleep or about to fall asleep. She was actually sitting at her computer. And her rear end started feeling numb, so she stood up to stretch. And she also used blackout curtains to keep extraneous light from coming in. Now, once everyone was asleep, she had shut all the curtains between the two main rooms except the bay windows. She did that because a street light had gone out, and the bay window faces the house next door. Now, not much of a view for such a large window, but you could see part of the road to the left, which is where the street light went out. Lived in a small town, a literal one-stop sign town, not one traffic light for miles. And the house that faced their bay window was empty. They'd actually lived in that house first. They needed more space, and the house they were in was right next door and much bigger. So the house they'd previously lived in was vacant. Now, in the house they were living in, there was a basement with walls raised above ground about a foot or so. So the bay window measurements from the top of the window to the ground must have been about 10 feet. Now, when the street light went out, it became very dark. And she doesn't like people looking in on her, so she usually had all the curtains shut. But because the street light was out, she waited to shut that particular window so she could keep an eye out for any potential hazards. Such a small community, one street light out can be a hazard for outsiders scurrying through with bad intentions. As she stood to stretch, she moved a few steps to get between the walkway, between the kitchen and the living room. TV was on and sits in between the bay window and the kitchen windows, so she could see her in her peripheral vision both rooms simultaneously. And as she began to stretch, she, for some reason, faced the bay windows first. When she looked out the bay window, arms above her head from stretching, she saw a darker mass than the darkness outside. It blocked out the house next door in an area. The eyes were glowing red, not extremely bright, but a deep red tone. She found her own eyes fixed on its eyes, almost taunting it to blink first, but she felt froze, almost paralyzed while standing there. It's a brief moment of shock as, she realized that those eyes weren't blinking, weren't moving, weren't changing color. It was just a blank stare. Now, she's 5 foot tall. With the ground raised up outside, it stood taller than her with the help of the raised basement. Well, as she watched, she realized whatever it was not disappearing. So she told herself to slowly turn as if she was stretching and didn't see it, even though it knew that she did see it. As she turned slowly, still stretching toward her kitchen, she held that pose for about 5 seconds and then turned around in the hope that it was gone, and it was still there, looking in at her. Now she began to wonder what she was dealing with. In panic mode, not making the best decision, she slowly turned toward the kitchen. Inside her head, she was had a mantra going, please don't be there, please don't be there. She began to turn back and look. And for a third time, she was shocked to see it. And she almost bolted out of the room, and at the same time, she started to open the door to get a better look at what it was or find out what it wanted. Now, luckily for her, she didn't do either. Well, the fourth time she turned to the kitchen, she didn't turn back so quickly. Waited for what seemed like forever, but it was only about a minute. Before she turned back around to check this time as she faced the kitchen. The blackout curtains in there as well. She said she could feel its energy wrapping around the side of the house where the long kitchen windows were. Well, with the curtains closed, of course, she couldn't see outside, but she's positive those curtains didn't stop him. And she looked at this thing and one more time. She didn't get the sense it was there to do harm. It was just curious. It wanted to see what was going on in the house. She still has questions as to what it was. Now, this story does suggest not all red identities are there to inflict harm. Although it's certainly creepy, this particular red-eyed shadow person seemed to have done what its humanoid figure counterpart usually does. It stands and stares at something new that it doesn't understand. Now, you might ask, was it sizing the woman up to make a meal out of her, then decided to feast on other prey, or was it simply observing and taking notes about what she was doing? Or maybe it was trying to figure out what a human was doing in a desktop computer. But then that raises the question, does it know what a computer is? In an encounter with a shadow person, you always leave with more questions than you do answers. Now, it might come as a surprise to some that not all shadow people have visible eyes, that have visible eyes have red eyes. Now, red is certainly the color most often reported, but there have also been stories of dark entities with yellow and even purple eyes. These acted in such a way as they're much the same way as their red-eyed brethren. So it's unclear as to whether the color of eyes actually has any significance to the function of the shadow person. Then the yellow eye is actually the brightest color the human eye can see. It's usually related to learning and stimulating our perception. For this reason, also because it's a cheerful, energetic color, it's often used for children's toys. It's also the eye color used most often in horror movies to depict demonic possession, which is something to keep in mind. Then there's purple. That's long been known as the color of royalty. Since the dye was such a difficult color to produce in ancient times, it's usually only the wealthy who could afford to wear purple. It also signifies imagination and spirituality. Sort of encourages us to get in touch with higher levels of consciousness. Now, there have been blue eyes seen. And blue is generally considered a calming color, which is why it's a color you usually find used by hospitals and airlines. It's a quiet color, promoting physical and mental relaxation. It also symbolizes loyalty, strength, and trust. Now, while blue eyes have rarely been reported in regard to shadow people, but they have been seen. There's also been a question raised about the so-called black-eyed children. There are also a suspicion that they're a type of shadow people. While they certainly seem extremely creepy, black-eyed children or black-eyed kids, as they're called, simply don't share many of the similar characteristics that the various types of shadow people seem to have with each other. Now, black-eyed children are strange entities often described as very pale with completely black eyes and wearing drab, almost oversized clothes. Their appearance is normally disheveled and shabby. And it's the way they talk that seems to alarm most folks. Almost a monotone. They can appear on your doorstep, even at your car. And they demand entry, but in the most peculiar way. For some reason, they have to be invited in. And they'll say just, you want to invite us in, along with other methods of persuasion regarding food, or we'll even ask to come in and watch the TV. But the entire time, their words are in a monotone. The target of this encounter feel compelled to let these children come into their home or car while simultaneously feeling a great sense of alarm. Witnesses have reported that if they refuse those requests and turn their eyes away from the children will immediately vanish. Now, these sightings are quite different than shadow people encounters. First of all, the black-eyed kids, as they're called, or BEKs, are fully manifested. Their entire form is visible, including facial features, hair, arms, legs, clothing. And there's no dark faces devoid of any features about these BEKs. They look just like children. They're just, you know, a bit off from what we're used to. Secondly, black-eyed children are extremely interactive. They'll walk up to a person's front door, knock on it, and talk to the person that answers. They'll carry on entire conversations with the person, try to persuade the target to let them in until they're denied. They don't have these, shadow people don't have these stand-at-your-door type confrontations or conversations with people. And finally, shadow people don't need to be invited into your home. Vampires do. Shadow entities of all kinds will manifest in your bedroom, your living room, your basement, pretty much anywhere they like. They manifest outside a window and stare at you like the one young woman described, but they don't knock on the front door. They just enter. Now, certainly the black-eyed children, or the black-eyed kids, as they're called, are extremely creepy. They seem to come from nowhere and disappear back where they came from. And they have the disconcerting black eyes. Certainly there's something either supernatural or interdimensional, but they're not shadow people, at least in the general figure. Now, another type of shadow person is described as a hooded figure. It's usually considered menacing in nature. Not as menacing as the fedora man, but there are a surprising number of reports in which the hooded figure is acting more benevolent in nature. Maybe the reason so many people believe this shadow person to be evil and nefarious is because they relate the hood with the Grim Reaper. Now, the Grim Reaper, if in fact this entity exists, is not a shadow person, but entirely a different entity entirely that's a representation of death. And death is almost neutral. It's not evil at all. When it comes calling, it's just doing its job to collect souls when one's time on earth has expired. It serves as a psychopomp, a guide to help souls find their way to the next realm. The Reaper is said to be shrouded in black robes, carrying a hood, and many people say it carries a Sith. And its appearance, one of ominous darkness and foreboding, causes people to ask if the Grim Reaper is a type of shadow person. Though, generally, it's considered not to be. Now, hooded shadow figures are very enigmatic and are certainly shrouded in mystique. What lies underneath that hood is certainly unknown, and why they've elected to wear a hood in the first place is pure speculation and conjecture by anybody trying to determine the reason for it. These figures seem more physically active than other shadow entities, moving about quite freely, while other shadow people seem resigned to lurking in corners and staring at people. Now, there's a pair of twin sisters who live in Calhoun County, Illinois. And over the years, they've each had their share of paranormal experiences, including multiple encounters with hooded figures. And they've seen firsthand that not all hooded shadow entities are created equal. Now, according to one sister, she grew up in a small town where everybody knew everybody. Everybody was neighbors and family and friends, and it was a nice way to grow up. So when a friend asked she and her sister if they wanted to go on a ghost hunt, adventure hunt, how could they say no? The place she suggested had a long history, and the property had also been occupied by some business or other for a long time. It had been a local grocery store while the two sisters were growing up, but it had changed hands and eventually closed down. It had been a place where they'd been many times. Never really scary, but in a couple of areas in the back of the store, folks felt uneasy. There had been some experiences reported that had happened to her and others who had toured the property. Now, these stories were kind of on the dark side and included entities that tried to scare you away from touring it. So they set up an evening for their adventure, and Of course, both the twins were pretty excited about going on this ghost hunt since it would be the first one they'd ever been involved in. And the night before the hunt was certainly normal in every respect. They went to bed, ready for a good night's sleep, and sometime in the night, one of the sisters woke up. Wasn't sure why she woke up, but she looked toward the foot of the bed and saw a dark figure standing there. It was very black and seemed to have an outline as if it was wearing a hood and a cloak. And what was interesting was the thing had a hold of her ankles and was starting to lift her off the bed. Well, at that point, she got scared and started kicking her feet, and as she did that, she looked toward her young son and husband, who were in the bed beside her. All she could think was she hoped her son didn't wake up because he'd be really scared. Then she looked back at the dark figure and was still kicking her feet as this entity still had a hold of her ankles and was pulling them off the bed. She began to get panicked and frightened, and she could feel the figure enjoying her fear. In fact, the more scared she got, the stronger the entity became, and she could hear it laughing. Well, she was raised Catholic and still practiced her religion. She was panicking. She saw something her aunt had told when she was younger. She said that as Catholics, we believe if you're in the presence of evil or need help in any way, you call out the name of Jesus three times and he'll be there for you. So that's what she did. When she said the name of Jesus three times in a row, the figure vanished. She decided that dark figure's trying to keep her from going on the ghost hunt the next day. Well, the next day she told her sister about her experience, and they both agreed and needed a little help from their Catholic faith. Both had Catholic rosaries had been blessed by Pope John Paul II, and they put them in their pockets. As they were driving to the property, they passed the Catholic church and decided to stop in for a prayer card with the prayer of St. Michael the Archangel printed on it, and they put that in their pockets. As they pulled up to the store to meet the rest of the tour group, they recited the prayer before they got out of the car. Even if it didn't do anything, it made them feel protected. Well, not a lot happened during that tour because the young lady running the tour felt kind of responsible. Nothing happened. She said, normally this is an active place. I don't know why it's so quiet today. Well, the sisters felt guilty about that because they thought their rosaries and the prayer to St. Michael might have had an impact on the entities there. They did have a fun evening, but not much activity was observed. Later on, she told her friend about that ran the tour about what had happened and the fact they had the rosaries. Now, this story is interesting in that the shadow person got physical. It's hard to know whether or not the hooded figure she encountered anything to do with the building they're going to investigate, but it's probably the energy she and her sister surrounded themselves with the following day kept most of the entities at bay during the investigation. Well, on that note, we come to the end of today's show. We'll be talking more about shadow people tomorrow. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.